It's been 9 years since I wrote Every Moment Matters, Savoring the Stuff of Life, and 13 years since I wrote my first book, Living an Uncommon Life. And while both of them did pretty well on the very crowded self-help shelf, crammed next to titles that promise greater success, money, power, neither of those two books of mine were designed with that result in mind. I was simply writing about my own life, and while authenticity doesn't grab headlines, it does seem to resonate in a time that on many levels seems so very inauthentic, where the line of reality has become a little blurred. So while I've enjoyed responses from readers around the world from my work, publishing, especially self-publishing and all that goes with it, is not for the faint of heart. And even the greatest authors eventually end up in the same place, the bargain book bin. One time, I found a copy of Every Moment Matters in the Buck 99 pile right next to John Grisham and Anne Lamott. Made me feel really good. So why would I go through this again and write a third book? Stick around. I'll tell you why. Welcome to the Life 2.0 podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. Glad to have you with me on this Saturday. And this is one of these kind of last-minute podcasts. I've been really, really busy lately doing things that would, you know, suggest a life filled with purpose. But some of it's just filler and a lot of it is just fodder, and that's just the way life goes. But it kind of came on me to talk about this new book that I've been working on for a year. It's called Phenomenon, Sacred Moments, Messages, Memories, and Other Shit I Can't Explain, because that's really how my journey has been. Knowing how the publishing business has changed over the years since I wrote my first book, I was, you know, like, this is a really great idea, but I know how this all works, and it's a lot of, you know, writing is only like a third of it, and that takes a year in itself, and then there's editing, and then there's the publishing and the marketing, so it's a massive undertaking, and I'm at the finish line with the book, and I'm glad for that. And what you heard me reading from in the open was part of the author preface. And so why would I do this again? And I'm going to continue with the author preface and explain that. I call it the nudge. That's why I did this again. In late 2018, there was a very strong, deep inner pressure to put some of my more unique experiences between the covers of a book. Over the years, I've learned that if I don't take action when that feeling comes, it gets harder to ignore and tends to create a serious case of what I call spiritual constipation. And the only antidote I know is to proceed as instructed, even though I don't have the full blueprint to follow. One of the overriding lessons for me in my life is that listening is everything, and that acting on those inner instructions, come what may, is of utmost importance for reasons that are often unclear in the moment and sometimes don't even show up until years later. All of the experiences, the epiphanies, the occurrences, visitations, coincidences, and other shit that I can't explain in this book is based on that one understanding. A cosmic game of connect the dots is going on all around us, and for the most part, we're just too damn busy to notice. Stuck as we are in the constant battle for our attention being waged between the news programming, the talk shows, podcasts, blogs, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. So don't expect any blatant self-help stuff in this book, because the purpose is more about inspiration, aka the divine influence or action on a person believed to qualify him or her to receive and communicate sacred revelation, which pretty accurately sums up all that you're about to read. Now listen, I'm not anointed in any special way. I do understand, however, that to whom much is given, much is expected. And that inspiration, at the right time, in the right way, at the right place, at the right juncture, can lead to transformation. Before I type any more words on this trusty, dusty Dell laptop of mine, a disclaimer for you. All that follows is true and to the very best of my recollection, although some details now decades later are a little fuzzy around the edges. Also, I've omitted the names of people that I couldn't reach for their permission to be included. I've changed some names to protect those who didn't even know they played a role in all of this. And I offer my thanks to those who allowed me to include them as witnesses, for lack of a better term, which further validates these incredible events. And while I know these experiences impacted me and those who participated in them, it doesn't necessarily mean, even after replaying these events hundreds of times in my head, that I fully understand them. As for the most part, I only see my little tiny piece of the puzzle. And it's from that perspective I share these incredible and extraordinary events, the phenomena. Now, one definition of phenomena is an unusual, extraordinary, unexplained event. Phenomena are often, but not always, understood as things that appear or experiences for a sentient being, or in principle may be so. Listen, I doubt that anyone who's ever watched me play high school, college, semi-pro football, or throw people out of a bar as a bouncer would call me a sentient being. But I digress. My only slightly elevated consciousness makes it very difficult for me to major in minor things. I mean, I care far less about sports and politics and other distractions than I ever did before the two near-death experiences I had before the age of 27. And over time, I view those things simply as platforms for human behavior, where the good, the bad, the ugly, they're all on full display. I'm convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that we all have what's called a sixth insatiable sense, as my friend songwriter David Stoddard describes it, an extrasensory app that allows us to go past the five basic senses that come as standard equipment at birth, and not just see, taste, smell, feel, and hear, but also energetically experience the world we live in. But over time, that ability gets pushed farther and farther back behind the firewall of our logical mind. And like any other muscle, it atrophies if it's not exercised on a regular basis. To that end, in my experience, by adjusting my spiritual sight on that which is often overlooked, I've been able to strengthen my ability to not just read between the lines, but to see the spaces that hold the lines together and add spaces. That's where the real magic is. As I began to compile the events of this book and word spread, I often found myself in conversation with friends and family who eagerly began to share with me their own experiences of phenomena, but had been uncomfortable talking about them for various reasons. People think you're batshit. I mean, really, when you really get down to it, that's not in the book, by the way, that's called ad-libbing, but that's why most people don't talk about this stuff. They're going to think I'm nuts. Who cares what people think? Be yourself. Anyway, I digress again. I guess they figured if I was willing to write a book about this stuff, they had permission to share with me their own insights and the whispers and coincidences, visits, and signs they had experienced. And if we pay attention, the reasons for these occurrences often reveals itself in its own time. So, if you're willing to allow the boundaries of your belief system, that tangled mass of downloaded confirmation bias bullshit, and other assorted tenets and opinions to be stretched, you'll be amazed to discover, as I have, that you're far more than your politics, your religion, your ethnicity, even your gender. And with those limiting barriers removed, you can then begin to understand that how you were born, the circumstances that brought you to the planet, isn't nearly as important as why you showed up. Every day you're alive is like a blank page in the book of life, sitting upon a shelf, waiting to be written by the longing higher self. That's the author preface from this book, Phenomena. And I, as I mentioned, I spent a year working on this, and that nudge did start just about a year ago in 2018. And the 12 chapters in this book literally bubbled to the surface over time. I have this odd habit of having to know as much as possible before I ever start writing a book. And I've done this for other people. I've written 5 books, ghostwritten, collaborated on, whatever you want to call it, to a greater or lesser degree, 5 books in 6 years. That's a lot of writing. And every one of my English teachers from grammar in high school are surprised as hell. What, really? You? Yeah, me. So, you know, listen, when you hit the bestseller list a couple times, and I'm not talking about the New York Times, there's like 14 bestseller lists. I'll take any of them, which means people are reading your book. And when I hit the one of the bestseller lists for inspiration and spirituality or something with Living an Uncommon Life back in 2007 or 8, second only to the Reverend T.D. Jakes in sales in that direction. You know, T.D. Jakes has it going on, like that guy, brings the thunder. I started getting emails and phone calls from people that I went to high school with, like, are you the same guy? Paint job's different, but the internal workings kind of are the same. It just had some, you know, some left turns and right turns, and I've paid attention in some places, and it's brought me to this point. So, you know, it's always fun for me, especially as this new book is rolling out, when I get orders from people who knew me before any of this. These are the people I went to high school and grammar school with, long before I had written books, been on the radio, all this stuff, this presence that I've become to some greater or lesser degree before all that. And that's always the toughest audience for me. And a few years ago, I reconnected with a guy I went to high school with. We played football together. He was the captain of the team in 1976, and I was co-captain, and I was co-captain with another guy in 1977. And he had gone through a rough patch, and I had not seen him for at least 30 years. I was living in Michigan at the time, and I don't exactly remember how. I think we connected on Facebook and reached out, and, oh, my God, how you doing, blah, blah, blah. And so we agreed to meet at this place in Chicago called Roma's Beef. And if you're ever in Chicago on Cicero Avenue over there by Montrose, you go to Roma's Beef, you get it dipped, you get the extra sweet peppers, you know what I'm saying? So I met him there, and that's how we sound sometimes here. And I met him there, and I didn't recognize him. He had gained a few pounds. We all do. He had kind of outdid all of us at that point. He knows it, and he's done things to correct. He's doing really well now. But he'd been through some rough stuff, and somehow, some way, he was either in a bookstore. I don't recall exactly how it happened, but he ended up getting my first and second book from his kids, I think, for Christmas or something. And he couldn't believe it. You know, he knew it was me, and he couldn't believe it, and we reconnected, and it's just been a great gift to have that reconnection. And he's been at all the, you know, I give these talks here in Chicago and other places, and he'll come out and sit in the audience. And it's kind of surreal for me to watch this guy I used to see run around on the playground looking at me from the seats at an auditorium. But it's part of my journey. This is what I'm here to do. And so come hell or high water, I continue on. And that's why I wrote this book. As I was saying, there's this nudge. And for me, the more we ignore that stuff, the less it happens. It's like a muscle. It truly is. If you don't go to the gym and work out, you get weak or weaker. And our spiritual constitution is in so many ways just like that. So these stories, these events that have taken place in my life, some of these I had considered for my second book, Every Moment Matters, because it was along the same lines. And there are events in there that were, you know, just incredible to me. And there, then I'd held back on talking about some of these other things for 9 years. And for no reason in particular, you know, you get busy with other stuff. And listen, I really enjoy writing. I love doing podcasting, but it's a lot of work. And the process of taking a concept, you know how many times a year I get approached, somebody say, I want to write a book. And I'll say, what you really want is the end result. It's like the old story of the high-end cocktail party downtown here in Chicago. You can put any city you want in there. There's this guy playing the piano. It's incredible. He's the evening entertainment. There's all these high-enders there doing their thing. And finally, at the end of the evening, a lady comes up and says, I'd give anything to play like you. He said, no, you wouldn't. You wouldn't practice 4, 5, 6 hours a day to get to this point for 30 years. And the whole idea is that we usually see the end result of people's lives or when they get to a certain point. And I mentioned my friend Dave Stoddard, who has a CD that was actually has a song on there called, well, I think the whole CD is called Sixth Insatiable Sense. And he's an incredibly talented guy. He plays every instrument known to man. And, you know, I don't know that he'll ever get to Carnegie Hall, but he loves it. He travels the country. He's a music teacher. And he does what he's supposed to do. If he ever shows up at the Carnegie Hall, people are like, oh, this is great. Yeah, a 30-year overnight success. So we're always looking at the end result. We say, wow, we don't realize the path sometimes. You know, there's a story that comes to mind from Every Moment Matters where I was leaving New York very late one night, and I'd missed a flight, and I got the last one out, and weather and all kind of stuff going on. I was sitting in first class, and a young lady came on the plane and sat next to me. She was very, very nervous. Didn't like to fly, flying back to Chicago. And we started talking. And in the course of our conversation, she informed me right up front that she was Muslim for whatever reason. And I said, oh, okay, well, nice to meet you. You know, so, okay, we're fine. I kind of don't care what people's religious, you know, aspects or aspirations are. If you're a human being, let's talk. we had this conversation on the way back about life and the difficulties and all this stuff going on. And I happened to have a copy of the first book in my bag. And I, at that time, I used to leave copies of the book signed on airplanes. I've gotten more notes from people who picked up my book out of Boston or Aspen or San Francisco or Dubai. Fascinating that you stick it in there and it flies all over the world. Best advertising I ever did. So as we're flying back to Chicago, I strike up this conversation. And she starts telling me where she lives and all that's going on. And it's very late at night. And I know this part of Chicago real well. It's not the greatest place. And I said to her, I'd be happy to give you a ride from O'Hare to where you live. And no problem. And she, oh, that'd be fantastic. And she was probably, you know, this is 10 years, 11 years ago. She was probably in her, you know, early to mid-20s. And I'm a dad, and I have a daughter at that time who's that age. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't want you on the L train all the way from O'Hare down to this area. And so I got my car and I waited outside and she never showed up. I waited 20 minutes, half hour. I'm like, she's not coming. And then it dawned on me, would I want my daughter to get in a car with a strange guy? No, but my intentions were pure, but I didn't think about that. And that was the last I've ever heard of it. I gave her the book. I signed it to her. And that was the last I ever heard of it. I'm going to say it's probably almost a year later, I go to my high school reunion, and it's a great turnout, and we're having a great time, and all that stuff, and I walk in the bathroom at one point. One of my buddies had photocopied the cover of Living an Uncommon Life, because my face is on there, and they stuck it by the urinals, which, you know what, hey, that's how it should be. Listen. If that's the worst that came out of it, it's all good. So I go to the bathroom, I'm cracking up because I know who did it, and I'm sitting there looking at myself while I'm taking a leak. And I finish up and I walk out. As I walk out to the foyer, I run into this woman, and she's like, John, is that you? I'm like, okay, yeah. You know, this is a class reunion. I don't remember. We had, you know, 600-700 people in our graduating class. And we start talking, and she says, I can't believe this. And I'm like, well, can't believe what? It was her daughter that was on that flight a year earlier. And I don't know how that happens. I'm just glad that it does. And so we ended up calling her daughter. We're all crying on the phone. It was a great reunion. It was wonderful. I'm so sorry. My dad would have killed me if I got it. Didn't get in the car. I'm just glad you're okay and everything's fine. But I went to high school with her mother. Now, listen, I didn't know her mom in high school. But because of the picture and the book and the whole thing, and the intersection right at that moment in the foyer of the restaurant, it was a really incredible, that's when every moment matters. It was really, really incredible. So that story is actually in my second book called Every Moment Matters under Boomerang, because when I threw it out, it eventually came back. So the whole point of that little story and this little ranting podcast on a Saturday is the fact that there's a lot of shit going on we can't explain. We think we're so smart. Just because we have everything doesn't mean we know everything. We have we look through a very limited keyhole as a species on all levels. And there's not a lot of growth comes out of that. So my experiences have been for me that these difficult times that I've gone through, and the book is full of them, phenomena, that they were opportunities for me to change and to grow and to move forward and not to stay back and become a participant in the changes, not a victim of it. There's way too much of that. Change is the one constant, as they say. And if you're a victim of change, you're powerless. If you're a participant in it, then you're powerful. And I'm not saying that there aren't crimes being committed where people are victims. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the circumstances of life, when pressed upon us, give us an opportunity to make a choice. If you've ever read Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, you'll know what I'm talking about. If you haven't read it, you should. This is a guy who was interred in the Nazi, you know, concentration camps. And he was convinced beyond all shadow of a doubt that he was not going to be a victim of these circumstances. He's going to be a participant and find his way out. And he did. Life-changing book. But the point is, that's how you need to focus on things in order for growth to happen. And when growth happens, opportunities open up that you never would have happened before. And coincidences start taking place all the time, like getting on an airplane. And a year later, I went to high school with her mom and all that stuff. So this book was important to me on a couple levels to write. The first and foremost part was that nudge, as I mentioned. If I don't do this, I'm up shit creek without a paddle. I'm not kidding. And most, if not all, of what I've written about goes back to an incident when I was 19 years old. I got electrocuted, and I shouldn't be here. Event number one. And there's so much documented evidence and experiences of people who have severe electric shock, whether it's lightning or, you know, man-made electricity. They don't come out the same way they went in. And that is definitely true for me. And for years, I kind of hid that stuff. I'd hear things or see things or do whatever. And I never said a word about it. I kept it to myself. And I started to realize I was losing that. So the very first chapter in the book is called Shock Therapy, because that's what kicked all this off for me. And then the book goes on from there talking about these experiences and moments and things that took place that there is just no rational explanation. And that's a good thing. That's a really good thing. So I'm going to be doing some media, quite a bit of media between now and the end of the year around the book. You may hear me on other radio shows or like that in print, whatever. And I figured this, hey, my podcast, I can talk about anything I want. Why wouldn't I start interviewing myself to some degree on my own show? As I said in the open, I've run into people all the time. Once I start telling them what I've experienced, different things, they're like, psh, I got to tell you this, get a little of this. My parents died 30 years ago and my dad keeps, I can smell his aftershave or something like that. Or I kept thinking about this one person and then they just walked in front of me. Or, you know, I needed some sort of providence in my life or some sort of, you know, support. And I just kind of thought about it and put a prayer down about it. And 2 days later, this happened. And by using that muscle, whatever you want to call it, it's amazing what you can accomplish. I really feel so deeply, as I said, how you were born, not important. The circumstances you were born into, whether you had enough or didn't have enough, that's not the point. The point is, you beat one of 400 trillion sperm to get here, then you should be doing something with it. Part of our equipment at birth is this energetic way of brailing the world, but we don't use it. You know, listen, if you think about music, how it makes you feel, it is a vibrational thing. Every Sunday on Facebook, because on some level I'm probably a frustrated disc jockey, not just a talk radio host, I do this thing for 10 years called Sacred Sunday Songs. And they're not religious per se. They're not spiritual per se. They're nothing except music that makes people feel good. And just think about that concept. Whatever music it is that moves you, from the classics to rap to country, it doesn't matter. Pop, it doesn't matter. When it moves you, it makes you feel a certain way, even though you're just feeling a vibration, like the Beach Boys said, right? Good, good, good. That song actually was written by Brian Wilson because his mom talked about dogs being able to feel the vibration of people. Go look it up. I'm not kidding. So we live in a world of vibration. We live in a world of constantly emitting signals. And if you're not picking up on this stuff, you're missing something somewhere. And I have this notion that the architect of the universe, whatever you want to call that, doesn't matter to me. Whatever you call that is constantly in our favor, meaning here's something for you, here's something for you, here, but we're not listening. We hear it maybe, and I got to tell you what, this book is also filled with examples of when I didn't listen. There was a time, in the epilogue of this book, I talk about my friend Ginny, who I've known for 30 years or more, and she invited me to lunch one day. I was in the closet getting my coat out. I was going to meet her there, and I literally heard in my head, take your spare car keys. What was that? Well, I heard, take your spare car keys. Why would I do that? Why would I take my, I got keys right here. Took off, drove 35, 40 minutes to the restaurant, got there. Keys were gone. And when it was time to leave, no keys. I hadn't moved out of the building. I hadn't hardly moved out of the booth we were eating lunch in. I had the wait staff digging in the garbage. Maybe I threw it out. I was on my hands and knees digging through the seat cushions. No keys. Gone. Can't explain it. Don't know why. Ginny had to drive me all the way back to my apartment. I had to get the landlord to let me in. I had to get my spare keys, and she had to drive me all the way back to my locked car in the parking lot because I didn't listen. And my life has been filled with things that I didn't listen, and then I should have. And so that's the other side of all this. We're not here very long in this form. And there's these opportunities that kind of come and go. And if you are of the belief and the mindset that whatever the governing energy of the universe is kind of in your favor, that, you know, you're here for a reason, then connecting into that providence is probably really smart. Or you could just argue on Facebook about politics, because, you know, that'll change things. So I wrote this book, Phenomenon, Sacred Moments, Messages, Memories, and Other Shit I Can't Explain. It took a year. And then there's the editing process, which is a whole nother level of, you're going to cut what off? As Hemingway so eloquently put, writing is easy. You just sit down at the typewriter and bleed. Well, now it's a keyboard. Maybe people still use typewriters. But that's all you do is vomit. So I vomited this book up for a year, all these different chapters, and then it was time to edit and clean up all the vomit and see what's left. And that's what's left is this book after much ups and downs, trial and error. And something happens to the human brain when you start editing, and there are things that are there that shouldn't be there, and you go over it four times going, now I can't even see it. This isn't for the faint of heart, as I've said before. And then there's, of course, as a self-published work, which I've never done before for myself. I've done it for other people. There's the whole cover design and putting all that together. So while I have the skills to do all this stuff, it is really, and it's very fulfilling, quite frankly. This is my decision. Do you know that on my second book, I argued with the publisher for 6 months about the cover design? That they wanted looked like a guy with an egg head or a Mr. Potato Head swinging on a tree or something. What? So that's what people like. People like Mr. Egghead and Mr. Potato Head swinging on a tree? How do you know this? Well, we have, you know, studies that prove. Well, that's bullshit. Here's what I'd like to have on. So we finally met in the middle, and I was able to pull an image out of that book, which doesn't have pictures, by the way, but I was able to use a chapter called Dragonfly. And even after all that, they still didn't get a dragonfly on the cover. They put a damselfly in there. Anybody that knows dragonflies knows there's a frickin' difference, but I got to live with it. Anyway, this is all at my hand, and my partner Teresa has done a huge amount of work. She did a lot of editing for this. And so whether it sinks or swims, really up to me, and I'm really good with that. As I mentioned, the first two books I did, major publisher, got a big check. It was all well and good, great. I had books stacked in my garage. To this day, when I go on Amazon, let me just give you two insights here in a second about Amazon. I'm not a fan. I'm a fan of the river, but not of the online retailer. And I'll tell you why, these two specific reasons. Number one is that the rankings are, when you do a book, there's so many categories, the rankings can kind of skew. And listen, I fell into this trap the first time when the book came out. I check my Amazon rankings every 9 seconds because that's what you do. And over time, you start to see there's some algorithm here that's kind of wonky. So I kind of let go of all that. The second thing is that my books are still on Amazon. You can buy a copy of Every Moment Matters or Living an Uncommon Life. Those are all resales. I own the rights to both those books. And in the near future, hopefully in the first quarter of next year, I'm going to reissue both of those under my own label here, Aurora Media. But if you buy a book online now from Amazon or any other reseller, I don't get a dime. And that's okay. I mean, I got to live with some of that. It's part of the life of an author. It's doing the greater good. So just know that that's kind of how that piece works. So you can buy slightly used whatever, and that's fine. And I hope you enjoy it. But the third part of this is the absolute reason I am adamant that I'm going to do everything I can to not sell this book on Amazon is because of the breakdown. It's like you have a product and you want to go to a store and you want that corner shelf space, you got to pay more for it. So Amazon, being the giant retailer that it is and a name brand, you know, you say Amazon to anybody under 40 and they think they've never heard of the river. Freaking amazing. A $19.99 book, and I'm just telling it the way it is. What is Amazon going to do? Come sue me? I'll take them right to the bank. I'll give them five over here, another five over there. A $19.99 book that sells of mine on Amazon. Amazon itself keeps $13. And then Lulu Publishing, the platform that I create all this on, they get about $3.50 some odd cents. And then I get whatever's left. What is that? $3.24. So I work for a year, do all this stuff, put it on as Amazon for premium placement, and I get the least amount of money in the whole deal. They get the most. Not going to happen on my watch. So let me do this. I promised I wasn't going to go over a half hour. Maybe with editing, I'll be okay. I wanted to introduce this book to you. If you're listening to this, that you've already seen the cover, it's on the my page for the Life 2.0 podcast, and I've highlighted where you can order it, pre-order, because it's not going to be out really till the end of November, maybe the 15th or a little later for retail. But I'm taking pre-orders now, and those will start shipping out probably by Halloween. So if you want to pre-order this book, it's $25, and that includes shipping, and you can't get it on Amazon. But what you can do is go back to the podcast page, or if you're listening on it right now, and click through to my AuroraMediaProductions.com page. That's AuroraMediaProductions.com, and the homepage is the book, and at the bottom you'll see where you can order $25. You can just send an email, so you can do PayPal or send a check, and if you send an email that's at the bottom of the page, and you're interested, you can send it off and we'll get it. And then I'll sign it and ship it as they come in. So it's $25 for Phenomenon, Sacred Moments, Messages, Memories, and other shit that I can't explain. And you can just order it by clicking on the highlighted area where the book title is. And that'd be great. And finally, here's what I want to leave you with this. I'm taping this in all full disclosure on a Friday afternoon. And it's a very interesting time because when you work on something, at least it is for me, for a year straight, pretty much every day, I'm just kind of wandering around in a daze. I've been so focused on writing and so focused on editing and so focused on proofreading and so focused on images, all this stuff. My brain's fine. That's the organ. My mind doesn't know what to do. And that's kind of like it needs to rest a little bit. And so a lot of the things in this book are things that you don't usually put your mind to. They just show up. Something like the most amazing thing. When I was producing at Harpo, at Oprah Radio for Dr. Oz, I was the senior producer, and one day we're in taping the Gene Chatsky show. And we wrap everything up. It was a Halloween show with my friend, the late, great Richard Crowe, the original ghost hunter and lecturer and author and expert on all things. I mean, this is a guy that put the normal in paranormal. He's a phenomenal human being. Died about 5 years ago. Great guy. As a matter of fact, I dedicated the book to Richard. And he had talked about a lot of the things that were going on in the Chicago area, St. Valentine's Day Massacre, and the famed lawyer Clarence Darrow was often seen on the Jackson Park Bridge walking at night. He died like in, 38 or something? So Richard was all about this stuff, and we had done this Halloween show, and we let him go on the phone, and Gene and I were talking, and she's in an ISDN line, secure line. You can't break into it in New York, and I'm in there, and Katie, my board op and my editor's in there, and this is a small space. I mean, there's room for four uncomfortably, and Teresa was in there, who was at Legal at the time, and my tech, my engineer, Sparky, Matt. And we're in between shows, minding our own business. And all of a sudden, this distended voice fills the room and utters a guy's name. And I'm like, what the f- was that? And then it happens again. We all heard it. And we just kind of like, okay. And see, Harpo Studios across the street used to be the 2nd Regiment Armory. And when the Eastland disaster occurred, which you we'll read about in the book, and 844 people died, they used that 2nd Regiment Armory as a morgue. And later it became Harpo Studios. And there was some really scary shit going on at Harpo Studios for years, and I thought, we're safe over here. Apparently not. Incredibly, incredibly, more than a decade later, I found this guy's grave, 20 minutes from where I live now. So the book is filled with these things that are outside of me. My mind really can't comprehend them. And if you've ever had something that you can't explain, maybe you're not supposed to, but maybe you should just appreciate it. So the book is filled with these amazing moments and memories and messages. And yet, for the most part, listen, if you've been tuned into this show or anything else I've done over the last 20 years, I am no clairvoyant. I am no medium. I'm an extra, actually an extra large tall, to be clear. But that stuff is, it's not like this is like a career of mine. It just shows up and I'm like, wow, how'd that happen? And then I've been, and when you say yes to these things, they seem to keep showing up, and then you can turn it off at any time, like a muscle, like put the weights down. I don't want to get any stronger. And it's a little reluctant. I feel like kind of like the reluctant messenger most of the time. I don't understand what's going on. It's very uncomfortable. And yet it's pretty cool. Again, the book is called Phenomena, Sacred Moments, Messages, Memories, and Other Shit That I Can't Explain. You can pre-order it on this podcast page by just clicking the title, and it'll take you to the Aurora Media page, and I am promoting the hell out of it. So there you go with that. I appreciate listening to the podcast. Be safe. Halloween's coming. Have a great time. And listen, here's a heads up. I rarely do this. I rarely promote shows that are coming in the future. But the day after Halloween, I'm going to think about doing a Halloween thing because my dad was all about that, Dracula, the whole deal. I might get that in. We'll see. But on Friday, November 1st, don't miss this. It is 20 years since Walter Payton passed away, who's actually in the book. I'll leave you with that. But it's an incredible conversation that I had with his son, Jarrett, about his pop on the 20th anniversary of his passing. So don't miss that. I appreciate you listening. Safe travels. Adios.